This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Law Talk on Joy Drive.
Today we're talking about relationships, the warning signs that something might not be working the way it should. Well, joining me in the studio are Beck Dahl, partner at Nichols Family Lawyers, and Lucy Street, a relationship counsellor and sex therapist with SHIPS, which is Sexual Health and Intimacy Psychological Services. Beck and Lucy, welcome to Drive.
Thank you, Warren.
Now, Lucy, let's start with you. You're an experienced therapist and have supported so many people through big relationship transitions. From your perspective, have you seen clients coming to you with concerns about unhealthy or worrying patterns in their relationship? And how do they tend to talk about or frame those concerns?
Well, look, I mean, a lot of people come in with a main issue and they perceive that as that's the issue. Usually it takes at least one or two sessions, and we've unpacked that there's so many underlying issues that kind of are tripping people up. And so I think we come into next communication issues, mismatched libidos, lack of intimacy seem to be the main presenting ones. But then when we do a little bit of digging, we come across things such as mental health issues, past trauma issues, sexual abuse issues. And so these are obviously things that we're going to have to do deeper work on.
Now, it seems sometimes people find it hard to differentiate the difference between, say, normal, healthy conflict in a relationship and, say, toxic patterns, which should be a cause for concern. So tell us, what's the best way to determine between those two forms of conflict? So is it mainly focused on how a couple communicates, or is it to do with how your partner responds to certain conflicts?
Well, see, if I said how they communicate, I think I'd be simplifying it. So this is sort of stuff that I talk about literally all day at work. And, you know, disagreeing is healthy. We need disagreements. It's good for processing. Yeah, absolutely. We can cry. We can disagree. We can raise our voices slightly, change tone, express emotion. But the key about it is, are we respectful in the way that we do this and how we process afterwards? So things like pinning an argument and co-regulating before calmly discussing the issue, as well as, you know, being able to move away respectfully.
How do you, you mentioned raising voices in a relationship. So how do you sort of know, like, when it's getting to a point where you're saying, actually, you know what, this is not normal conflict?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's a difference between, you know, raising a voice slightly and getting firm and getting a little bit versus I'm yelling at you, I'm degrading you, and you're feeling, you know, attacked, shrunk back. I mean, there's a lot of things to factor in here, including trauma patterns and triggers as well.
What happens when you do get, say, a couple coming to see you and there is some concerning behaviour going on, but one of the partners says, you know what, no, there's not. Everything's fine. You wanted to come here to counselling.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you threw that one at me. Hey. So that's something I actually see quite a bit. And it depends on the degree of what is coming across to me. If I find that there is an inkling of potential domestic violence, then I will have to cease the session, try and keep the people separate as best we can, and then report ethically to my supervisor and see where we go from there. If it's things in terms of disrespectful language or, you know, escalated back and forth, I can sort of handle that by saying, look, you know, if you want to pay me X amount an hour for you guys to yell at each other, cool, but it's not going to do anything.
What's a good way to handle conflict in a relationship? If you're, let's say we're in a relationship, something's going on, the toothbrush is always on the bathroom cabinet and it's not in the toothbrush holder. It annoys
asking
the crap.
Asking for a friend.
As Beck nods over there.
Oh, look, and this is another thing I'm going to have to advocate for, different neurotypes.
Ah, of course.
There's been a lot of times where people have come in and said these things, like they always do this thing, always do this thing. And I would say probably at least half the time we figure out that actually they're probably on the spectrum somewhere. And so a lot of these things aren't actually on their radar. So putting things like whiteboards up with reminders so that we don't get the object permanence in play. A lot of us exist in automatic drive. So these kind of little things just aren't. It's not there to upset. It's not done to upset the partner. It's simply not on the radar.
Beck, I imagine everything that Lucy's touched on sounds familiar to the stories you hear from clients as well.
Oh, absolutely. And look, you know, often by the time that they've got to a family lawyer, the conflict has reached a point where it's not okay anymore, or it's not healthy, or they're just not really wanting to do that. So that's often when people come to us and we're giving them legal advice. But as lawyers, we will often also suggest that our clients see someone like Lucy, because we can give them legal advice, but they need that scaffolding of that emotional support while they're going through the process as well.
Lucy, what about when you are in an argument with your partner? I mean,
when I'm specifically in an argument with my partner.
You specifically. Oof. But let's say, what? And you say, you know what, I just need to step away. For a moment, is that okay?
Well, I mean, that's great if you can actually say that safely. The thing is, we're going into, and this is what I talk about often, the flight, fright, freeze, or fawn systems, and it happens more intensely with people who have experienced trauma before as well, where we can get the activated system. So I like to talk about something that feels a little more containing, about creating a safe word protocol prior to we getting heated. We talk about a safe word that might be silly, help break that synaptic response a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And then we look about like what it looks like for each person to step away and regulate. Some people need to actually go and let the anger out of their body, have a cold shower, go for a run. Other people need to cry into a pillow. I ask them to try and get maybe a pen and paper, dot point, I statements, what they experienced. And then once they're regulated, try and re-engage with a curiosity standpoint rather than actually trying to re-engage while they're still heightened. And then I guess from a therapeutic perspective, if that is not safe to re-engage, then we have a standing point to come to and a mental pin for therapy where I can mediate.
What about giving someone the cold shoulder? I hate that, the silent treatment.
It is. And look, there's a difference between stonewalling and the switching off response or the freeze response. And a lot of people on the spectrum will get the freeze response when they're getting emotionally overloaded and they need time to regulate.
Right. So you're just frozen thinking, you know, I can't actually process anything moment.
And I would like to advocate for our more autistic types that in that area, the processing doesn't naturally occur generally in the moment with the emotional processing. So once we get to that space where we feel safe and regulated, you're more likely to get a congruent answer or reply from it later on.
But, I mean, you would be familiar, wouldn't you, with your partner in that case? So, you know, you would learn, you know, this is how my partner processes information. I need to give them space.
You would like to think so. Mm. But the amount of people that come in and the conflict comes to a point and it's been going for years and one person's desperate to be heard and the other one switches off and then re-engaging is too difficult. And the more we understand about the needs of the other person framed in a perspective that's actually more understandable, the easier it is to move away from the argument, because you can kind of go, well, this is going to get nowhere.
We're chatting with Beck Dahl from Nichols Family Lawyers and relationship counsellor Lucy Street from SHIPS. We're talking about relationship warning signs and how to recognise when conflict might be turning into something unhealthy. Are there any other red flags that we should think about?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious bigger ones when they're stepping up. So if we're getting degrading in the way we talk, if we're moving apart, getting secretive, and there's a difference between that I need to move away to self-regulate and I'm very stressed. And if someone communicates that, then, you know, like you said, we should know our partner's patterns, but there is a difference. Things like hitting walls, throwing things, obviously we're stepping into dangerous territory. As soon as it gets physical, get to safety.
Absolutely. So tell us, when is it time, other than, like you just mentioned, get to safety if it gets physical, when is it time for couples to seek professional help?
Oh, when isn't it? Look, I mean, I've had people come in and they're like, everything's great, we just want to improve our communication. And then I've had other people come in and go, we've broken up and we just want to do that civilly. And then there's everything in between. But I would say, you know, as soon as partner says, I think we should go to therapy, I'm obviously not going to say it's a bad idea to go to therapy. When you notice things like the intimacy is dropping off, and I don't just mean sex, I mean like the outer course, the physical intimacy, the bond that's actually just as important.
Yeah,
isn't it? It's if not more so. And so things like that, I think, you know, can always do with a brush up, even if it's just for a couple of sessions, touch base and get some skills.
What about the idea, Beck, I want to come to you in a moment from a legal perspective about when we should seek help, but what about the idea of seeing a counsellor or therapist at the beginning of a relationship so you can sort of almost set up the framework for communication? Would that be a healthy thing to do?
Look, I've had that as well. I've had that before people move in together and stuff like that, where they want to establish communication frames. They've experienced a lot of trauma and so they want to step into it mindfully. And it's a beautiful thing when this happens. Like, I love those sessions.
My requirement before anyone can move in is I need two toilets.
Oh, yeah.
That's more than fair.
I think, yeah, no, in a one toilet household currently, and I think that's life goals.
Beck, let's talk about it from a legal perspective. You know, when should someone seek help?
Yeah, look, I think that there's never a wrong time to get legal advice, which I say a lot, you know. I think that sometimes people think, oh, people have this fear that if I go and see a lawyer, that means everything's a drama and I'm going to be in court and it's all really awful. Whereas I actually love it when people come to see me even before they separate. So then we can have a really good conversation about, okay, this is what it may look like from a legal perspective with your finances or your kids, and this is what you can sort of plan and think about to get out there. So I would say if, you know, you're feeling like separation could be on the cards, there's absolutely no harm in going getting some legal advice then.
What about in terms of, like, if there's a couple and they both want to come and see you, is that appropriate or do you suggest another lawyer?
No, unfortunately, we have to only see one client, but we will suggest they see another lawyer. Look, I always say that I much prefer it if I'm acting for someone if their partner has a lawyer or their former partner has a lawyer as well, because it means both people are getting advice and they're both making really informed, supported decisions around what they're doing.
Lucy, when a couple comes and sees you and they've had conflict, what are some, I suppose, suggestions you make in terms of the way they communicate to each other that's, you know, healthy and respectful and will hopefully avoid some of those red flags from popping up that we spoke about before?
Well, look, I mean, again, I bang on about this, but the neurotype seems to be a big one that comes across in the office for me, particularly in the queer and genderqueer communities. And so a lot of the time it's kind of gone undiagnosed or it's a late life diagnosis. And so we've been doing this for so long that we don't even know it's a thing. So dismantling that is really helpful, and talking about processing times and having people understand that a lot of the ADHD types, like pointing at myself here, AUDHD, we'll want that emotional literacy immediately. We'll have that urgency, particularly that I'm going to forget what I say if I don't say it right now. Whereas the other side will probably be like, I'm feeling overwhelmed and I'm not taking anything in, and we'll get the shutdown. So bridging things like that with communication journals, documents, even like relationship check-ins, so that we put parameters around it so it doesn't flow into everyday time.
What about if we're having an argument? What are some of the words we should use that might be a bit kinder in terms of sorting out a difference?
If we're capable of that, we're in a good space. So I think if and I've had to learn to do this over many years, I feel right now, I see this right now, I'm curious about what's going on for you. I know you're not inherently trying to hurt me, so what is going on for you that you're behaving like this?
I love it. I could put that on record. Yeah, just play it.
Just play it down the phone or just out your speaker.
In terms of, you mentioned about being neurodiverse as well. I'm just imagining that if you weren't aware or you hadn't been diagnosed, I mean, there's a lot of potential there, isn't there, for a misunderstanding about your partner that could, I wonder how many relationships end unnecessarily because they don't understand their partner, or they don't understand themselves.
Yeah, and it's something, again, I see a lot, and it's something that I'm working in a lot. I live it. I am it. And so it kind of, like I said before, I learn by doing the dumb things a lot of the time. Some other people don't have to, but I also study it. But the thing is, it's a late-life diagnosis. There's a lot of grief behind it of what could have been, how things have turned out. But for a while, it's kind of like, don't think about breathing, and then all you're thinking about is breathing, and you realize that these things for holistic people don't exist. And so once we kind of know that, I guess the knowledge is power. But yeah, it kind of it affects a lot of relationships. It does.
What about when things in the relationship change? Like, for example, you know, they might go, they're at work 2 hours a day, and all of a sudden they're there 12 hours a day, you know, and you feel, oh, are they avoiding me?
What I think that you probably need to ask them directly what's going on for them. Is there any big projects happening? I mean, some of us, it's like, oh, this makes sense. I'm working more. They should be happy. It's not on the radar. I'm hyper-focusing on something. Other people are genuinely avoiding. Like, it really is circumstantial, but I would say the first port of call is an honest communication. Mean what you say and say what you mean.
Is that a warning sign? Someone withdrawing, being shut off all of a sudden?
All of a sudden. I would guess it would be a warning sign for something.
Mm.
Like, again, it's the communication thing. If they're suddenly switched off and moving away from you when you've generally been communicative and warm, then yes, there's obviously something we need to talk about.
Beck, if someone's starting to notice these kinds of changes, and there's lots to be aware of, and is thinking, you know what, separation might be on the horizon, hopefully not over the toothbrush, but what are some of the key things you'd encourage them to get organised or think about before they actually propose divorce with their partner?
Yeah, look, I mean, I preface this with what I always say, which is safety is the most important thing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And none of these things should take over that. And also, if you can't do any of these things, that's okay too, you know. I don't want people to feel pressured, but if it's a situation where you can, you know, do a little bit of preparation, particularly around financial things, you know, understanding where you can your household finances, because often in a relationship, division of labour, you know, one person mm-hmm. might handle the finances, getting an idea of that, understanding where your money is and where your debt is too. I think sometimes people, you know, might not realise they have a debt in their name, talking to your bank, understanding that picture, and doing a budget, you know, just understanding what your household spends as best as you can, so that when that household might become two, you can understand how that all works. So they're just little things, but they can be really useful, you know, perhaps when you go and see your lawyer, to be able to have a little bit of that information already.
Lucy, let's say someone is starting to consult their lawyer, like someone like Beck. How can therapy support people through that process?
Well, again, stuff I do see commonly. It really depends on the scenario. Some people weaponize the lawyer, like I'm going to a lawyer right now, and that causes the anxiety in the other person to then seek legal rather than it being an amicable thing. I do try and suggest it as in, like, hey, both get advice about this right now. This isn't my area and you need to sort these things out before it becomes attention. But yeah, it really depends on the scenario. It's if both people are and they're amicable about it, then great. But unfortunately, when it gets to me, it's a lot of it. I can see people weaponizing the lawyer talk.
Beck?
Yeah, look, I think that it's if people have access and are able to get therapy, I think it's such an important tool if they are going through a separation process, whether that's with lawyers or otherwise. I think that, you know, separation's hard, but sometimes the sorting out after the separation can be even harder. And so I think that, you know, particularly people who are parents and trying to co-parent with each other, absolutely. I think that that's where often a lot of support can mean that they're better parents, the kids are kept out of the trauma and those sorts of things. So I'm a huge advocate for it.
Great to chat with you, Beck and Lucy. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Warren.
That was Beck Dale, partner at Nichols Family Lawyers, and Lucy Street, a relationship counsellor and sex therapist with Sheeps. And if you're listening and you recognise some of the patterns we've talked about in your own relationship, remember that support is available, whether that's reaching out for therapeutic help to work on communication and emotional safety, or getting early legal advice so you understand your options and can make informed, child-focused decisions about the future. Don't forget, check out joy.org.au/support.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.